This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Okay, well, we're getting all excited. A hurricane is headed our way, but I don't care this year because I got my hurricane windows in just in time, so I will be able to sit this one out without getting too nervous. But right now it's absolutely gorgeous here, as it is most of the time here in Florida, and I am really excited that I have two wonderful guests. This is so much fun. I have the author and I have the narrator of a fantastic book that I was really thrilled to review just, it's what, been about a month, and The Storm Over Paris just grabbed me because, first of all, I love Paris, and I love the story, and the author is William Grubman, and I'm so happy that William's with us today. Hi, William.
Good morning. How are you?
Okay, great. And then I have the narrator of this book. And I tell you, I have just grown to love Audible books. But of all the Audible books I listen to, it is for this voice, or we should say that voice, because he is so famous. And I love his voice so much. He can whisper in my ear whenever he wants. Nicholas Guy Smith. Hi, Nick.
Hi, thank you so much.
Oh, I love you. You know, as I've told you before, you know, you are the only man that I, other than my husband of many years, that I take to bed with me. So it is such a delight. Well, as you know, when I talked to William before about Storm Over Paris, I was so excited when he said that you did the narration, and of course, as soon as it came out, I got it, and oh, I'm back in bed with you. I tell people that. I say, oh, I go to bed with Nick, and they say, oh, that's, and then I show them your picture. You know, I have to tell people this. You did the narration, of course, for A Gentleman in Moscow, and yeah. That was really the first time that I fell in love with Audible books, and not only did I fall in love with your voice, and I listened to this Audible version over and over, I had your picture there, your photo that I took off the internet, and I'm in my mind, you're all you know, you're Count Rostov to me.
Oh, that's a wonderful compliment. Thank you.
Well, I think that you know, you are just so amazing. And so, did you have fun recording this book, William's book?
I did. A little background on the book. I got a call out of the blue from Bill saying he'd written this book and he had listened to, I think it was Gentleman in Moscow, and he wanted me to narrate it. And I wasn't really keen on doing that because I don't have the studio facilities at home. But I was, you know, touched by what he said, and he was very kind. He contacted my agent, Vinny, at CSD, and managed to hire a studio in Hollywood. And we went in there, and it was wonderful. And the main reason for it being wonderful, of course, not only is it suspenseful, fast-paced, a real page-turner, but it's beautifully written. I remember asking Bill, while you were writing this, did you read the words? Every word, I think he said. He read the words aloud, and you can tell, I can tell as a narrator, often I come across books, bestsellers like this one, where the sentences are so long, and I am literally struggling to find a place where I can grab a quick breath But with Storm Over Paris, I didn't have that problem. It was written to be read, and that's all I say on that one.
Well, it does. It flows so just beautifully. You know, Bill, as I was reading it, that's how I felt. The story just came through the pages. I could see it in my head. As I said, I saw it as a film. That's normally, if a book really grabs me, that's how I see it. I see it as a film, and I forget. And so that's why now with this new Audible version, which I just love. Bill, you must be really happy that you got Nick.
I couldn't be happier. I'm totally thrilled. His voice absolutely was perfect for my character.
It does. It captures it. So, Nick, have you picked a section? As I said, you know, when you were on for Gentleman in Moscow, I had so many people, I will tell you this, women contact me and say, well, oh, that voice. And it is really so appropriate that your website is called That Voice, and you are known as That Voice. Because people, we fall in love with this voice, and you take us into the story. So what do you want to read to us today?
It's very early on, chapter 3, page 15, when Maury, who is the main character, when he meets Göring. So I'll start reading. Is that okay?
Okay.
Here we go. This way, one of the tall, blonde soldiers said, escorting Maury to the far end of the lobby. The man stopped before a pair of carved wooden doors and leaned in to open one of them. The stench of his sweat-soaked uniform assaulted Maury's nostrils. The soldier tightened his grip on Maury and led him into a large room that had previously served as the hotel's restaurant. Maury surveyed the salon in which he'd dined so many times, and the sight broke his heart. There were no white linen top tables set with sterling flatware and sparkling crystal goblets. The room had been transformed into a sprawl of desks, typewriters, radio receivers, and transmitters. Formerly attired, white-gloved waiters had been replaced by secretaries and Nazi soldiers. This way, his abductor pushed Maury through another set of doors into an almost vacant ballroom, but for one man. Maury froze. Impossible. Across the room, behind the grand desk, stood the most feared man in Paris, Reich Marshal Hermann Göring, the head of the Gestapo. What could he possibly want with me? The guard led Maury across the room. Maury's heart pounded, and he felt as though his shoes were filled with concrete, each step more difficult than the last. Then came the bellow he had heard on the radio. You're the Jew, Rothstein, Hermann Göring called out in German, his voice echoing in the empty space. Shocked not only by the presence of one of Germany's most feared leaders before him, but by the fact of being referred to as the Jew, Maury stared at the thick-framed man who looked to be 200 pounds. His hair was a dull brown, his skin unexpectedly smooth and pale. Droplets of perspiration trickled down Maury's side. Still, he managed. I am Morris Rothstein. Sit. Göring pointed to a chair in front of the desk. Maury obeyed. You're the art expert. Göring's voice had softened. Maury took a deep breath. I asked you a question, Göring snapped, his voice once again loud and commanding. Yes, I'm sorry. My profession is art. Maury felt squeezed by the painted walls with their gold-framed panels and gesso details. Your reputation is well known to me, Rothstein. Göring's tone relaxed again. He sounded almost friendly. I'm flattered, sir, Maury said, wondering if this officer of the Reich felt disdain speaking to a Jew who possessed great knowledge, knowledge he himself might not enjoy. Two men entered the room, wheeling a statue covered in cloth. Goering motioned to a nearby spot. "Put it down!" As the men moved the statue across the floor, Maury recognized the distinct shape of Aphrodite de Milo, or as most people knew her, Venus de Milo. Her beauty and grace were unmistakable. He was not only surprised to see her, but dismayed that she was being taken by Goering, removed from public view where she belonged. Goering eyed Maury. "I have work for you. I'm listening. The Fuhrer wishes a museum. I am aware." A look of surprise crossed Goering's face, and then he laughed. "Of course you are." Maury's tension eased. He had heard that Albert Speer and other architects had been commissioned to design a grand center which would be erected on the site of the Linz railroad station in Austria. It would include a museum, an opera house, a theater, a hotel, and parade grounds. "And what is it that you wish of me?" Maury asked. "The Fuhrer desires to acquire only the finest paintings and sculptures." "Of course," Maury nodded. "There are fine examples of art," Goering stated, "and lesser, so to speak." Maury glanced at the Venus de Milo. "And where will these works come from, Commandant?" Goering ignored the question. "You are the expert, and you will determine which paintings are of the finest quality and which are fine, but not in a premier category." "Where are these paintings you speak of?" Maury asked. "You'll be taken and shown tomorrow. Separate those that are of the best quality and explain your conclusions. You will report your findings only to me." "Determining the value of a painting or its historical importance is not something I can do by a simple inspection," Maury said. "I would need to research comparable pieces to determine why one painting might be superior to another. This certainly isn't something that can be done quickly." "I didn't give you a time limit. Just get the work done." Maury nodded. "You'll have a family." Goering's tone was icy. "They are safe for the moment. Keep them that way." Maury felt as though a boulder had landed on his chest. He could barely breathe. Goering nodded to the soldiers standing nearby. They escorted Maury from the room. There you go.
Wow. Well, as we say in England, brilliant.
It made me want to go out and buy the book.
Yes, me too.
It really does. Hearing your voice, that voice, Nicholas Guy Smith, you did a terrific job. And I found myself, I just closed my eyes and I went, you know, into your words, into Bill, you write beautiful words. And Nick, you just make them, so real. We feel what you put into your narration. It's absolutely fantastic.
Well, the characters are vibrant and very well fleshed out. I really feel they come alive on the page, especially Goering. And even the painting, there's a Caravaggio painting, The Expulsion of Hagar. That becomes a character, too. So it's a clever book.
It is, and so well written. And before I let you go, Nick, I would like just tell us a little bit about some of the other things that you have narrated, and I know that you are award-winning narrator, and you've done some really exciting things. So when I tell people about you and I say, you know, how much I enjoy listening to you, they ask, you know, some of the other things that you've done. So just give us a little bit of your background.
Well, I just, Notes on Blindness is a book that I narrated, and I actually was talking to my wife about this earlier today, and That was an amazing book. It's about a man who lost his sight, and he recorded his thoughts on a tape recorder, and then they were transcribed. And that's one of the reasons why it was very enjoyable to read. And I remember the director saying that it sounded like jazz. He described it as jazz the way I was reading it, because I had I had some good direction from someone at Penguin Random House that said, he said, basically, throw away the punctuation and just feel it and pull back. And I was experimenting. So to me, that book was very, very important. And of course, Gentlemen in Moscow, I had no idea that that would have 23,000 reviews on Audible. And people seemed to like it. And that was quite an amazing experience. And I've done a number of other nonfiction books, too.
But
some complicated.
Where else will they hear your voice? Because you've done a lot of film.
I've done some ADR work on films like 300, Star Trek. I played the professor, Spock's professor. I've got, I think, about 30 seconds of fame on that one. And I do quite a bit of work for 21 Pilots. The music group. They created a character for their world tours called Nigel. He's a robotic character, and the lead singer talks to this person on stage, and of course, it's my voice. It's all pre-recorded. Well, what did you think, Nigel? Oh, I thought it was marvelous. And then the crowd erupts or whatever. I've done quite a bit of work with them, and what else?
Now, you were at Cambridge, right?
Yeah, my background is somewhat academic. I did a Master of Philosophy at Cambridge, and then I came over to Pepperdine and did an MA in Communications. I teach at Glendale Community College. I'm a full-time instructor there, and teach public speaking and group discussion, and we've got a thriving department, and I'm very much involved in the online component of that. So that's really a big focus.
Well, I think you've come at the right time, certainly in the world, because Audible is just such a big thing now. And you have an amazing voice, of course, an amazing career. I bet when you were at Cambridge, you didn't think that one day you'd become such a famous person for narrating.
Well, yeah, I didn't. I was trying. Hugh Bonneville was somebody I knew at Cambridge, and he's the man in Downton Abbey. He was a student there with me, and I remember he commented on the fact that I did a lot of impersonations, and he actually was very complimentary and said that it was a good future for me in that area. And so I acted with him and people like Tilda Swinton. But I focused more on voiceover. It was easy. I didn't have to learn lines and things like that.
And who do you impersonate? Give me an impersonation of somebody famous.
All right. The ones that they liked when I was at Cambridge, students would say, "Give us your Richard Burton."
Oh yeah.
I didn't want to be a bloody actor. When you wake up in the morning and the first thing you want is a drink, you are in big trouble. And I used to do John Hurt, who I met. I interviewed him once as a student, and I did a scene impersonating him in I, Claudius with Derek Jacobi. And after I impersonated him, he said, "My God, you do a better impersonation of me than I do. It's incredible." All those sort of people, Ralph Richardson. I've known Johnny for 52 years. Johnny's younger than I am, but you know, being kind to Richardson all these years has probably slowed him up a bit. These kind of things. Peter Sellers. The only time that you're really happy is the moment you do the take on the set. When you do it, that moment comes out of you, and you've done it, and so forth. I did a lot.
Well, Nick, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. I know that Bill made the right choice when he selected you, and I am so really proud to have you as a guest on Joy on Paper, because you are a joy, and that's
thank you, and I hope your listeners will listen to your interview with Bill. I think you have a podcast. I thought that was a fantastic interview. I learned a lot about the book.
Well, thank you. And I'm going to talk to Bill some more about the book, but I'll let you go now, but I'll have you back simply because I would love to have you all the time, okay?
Thank you, Nick.
Okay.
Thank you, Bill. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye now, Nick. Bye. Oh, wow. Hey, Bill, isn't that fantastic?
That was fun. I loved hearing the voice. I loved hearing
I have so much fun doing stuff like this that nobody else does. Nobody thinks to bring the narrator on. But when you have a narrator like Nick who gives so much to your book, I think it's just fantastic. And I know that there will be listeners today who will say, okay, I have to get that book. And I love now that you can get it both ways. You can, if you get the Kindle and the Audible, you can get them together so you can see the words on Kindle and you can hear the Audible version. So I know that you're going to get people buying the book just because of Nick, but also because I'm recommending it because I think it's a great book. Now, I'd like you to hold on. I have to do a few commercials. I want to do a book buzz first. This is a little review that we do for authors. And Rita Moreau is going to do a review next week for your book. And so we're going to listen to that and a few commercials. But will you hold on so we can then talk more about the book?
It would be my pleasure.
Okay. Here we go.
Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz mystery. The House on Xenia by Rita Moreau is the fifth in the delightful Mary Catherine Mahoney mystery series, if I may say so myself. Here's the buzz. When a body is unearthed at the House on Xenia, long-held secrets could be revealed, but no one is talking, especially the aliens. Mary Catherine Mahoney, MC, prefers numbers to her supernatural powers. But when a cold case corpse shows up under her cousin's family home, the only calculations that add up are paranormal. And deep within the floorboards of the House on Xenia, MC and her madcap Greek family uncover evidence pointing to visitors from another planet. Pursued by military agents intent on keeping the secrets buried, MC will have to play by the rules of the House on Xenia in order to expose the alien mystery. And there's only one member of the family who can get to the hidden truth. The House on Xenia can be read as a standalone in the Mary Catherine Mahoney Cozy Mystery Series. If you like psychic female sleuths, crazy family antics, and long-lost aliens, then you'll love Rita Moreau's quirky tale, if I may say so myself. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. For more of my suggestions on the books you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joyonpaper. Rita Moreau, buzzing off for now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers' clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my very, very special guest today, William Grubman, and we are talking about his book, The Storm Over Paris, and we just had the joy of listening to his narrator, Nicholas Guy Smith, read a section, and it was beautiful. Hi, Bill.
Good morning.
Wow, didn't Nick do a great job?
What an incredible voice.
Oh. Absolutely. And I'm as he said, the book is so good. And I just want to tell people that it did, I don't know if it's won any more prizes, but I know it won The Storm Over Paris won the 2019 Indie Reader Discovery Award in Mystery, Thriller, and Suspense. And it was a finalist for the 2019 National Indie Excellence Award. And I'm sure it's going to win more awards because it is really so very well written. And I think that, you know, when I got the book and I was reading and I said, this book really, as I said to you at the time, when we first talked, I saw it as a film as I'm reading it. And I know that it's a trilogy. So tell us, how are you doing with the next part? And when is the next part going to be coming out?
Well, I'm just approaching the end of the research for book two, and I'll start writing it hopefully within the next month.
Wow, you've really taken a very exciting story, and tell us a little bit about the family. This family that is steeped in the art world of Paris, and just explain a little bit about them.
Well, I decided I would create a family that could potentially be a problem psychologically to Hermann Göring, so I developed a rich Jewish family in. Obviously, the Jews at the time were being persecuted, and the art that was being looted by the Nazis in Paris was art from major Jewish collections, among others. And I decided to put Maury into that situation where he was one of the ones that could have been gone after, but he was sought out for something else. Hermann Göring wanted him for his knowledge rather than for his art collection.
And the family, explain the family. I love his wife, and I'm trying to imagine. As I said, I'm sure that over there in Hollywood at the Beverly Hills Hotel, they've been sitting around the pool, reading the book, and
I hope so.
And thinking about who's going to play which part in this story.
Well, I wanted to create a very close-knit family, which I think I did, that works cohesively with each other rather than individually. Emil is the youngest son, and he works with Maury. Emil's a master painter, very well accomplished, and I'm going to try very carefully not to give anything away of the story. And Emil's brother Jacob, who is a student at I'm thinking of the École des Beaux-Arts where Emil goes. I think he's lycée, but anyways, he's an economics student. And the family works cohesively with each other. Ruth is a very strong mother. She's the matriarch of the family. She's the one that runs the house, et cetera, et cetera. This is the 1940s, and they're team players, and a problem has befallen this family, and they work as a team to figure out a way to solve it.
Well, as Nick said, it just reads so well, and you have created a fascinating family, and of course, the art takes a big part of the story, and explain a little bit your background in art.
Well, I've been, I have always loved art. I've loved art history. I'm an artist myself, although I'm not, you can't buy me anywhere. Don't look me up on eBay. But I've always loved art. I appreciate it so much that it survived for so long. Everything back to, you know, all the way back to Lascaux Caves and to the Egyptians with their carvings. And I've lectured on art. I've been a docent at our local museum. It's something I connect with from my soul. And when I decided to write a book, I thought, write about what you know. And I know about art. So I thought, this is what I'm going to do. And I wanted to write something that would cause people to turn every page with excitement. And I wanted to keep them on the edge of their seats. And that was the goal of A Storm Over Paris.
Well, you achieved it. And with the art, is I also love art. And having, you know, been to Paris many, many times, and you know, when you go to Paris many times, unlike, you know, if it's your one trip and you go and stand in front of the Mona Lisa for some reason, I don't know why, when you steep yourself in the art world of Paris, and as you're reading this book and you know how the art was so beautiful there at that time, I mean, and you try to look back and you say, how could so many awful things happen when these people were surrounded by art? And it's still hard sometimes to imagine what it was like in World War II in Paris. Because, as you said, it wasn't a black and white film. It was beautiful. Paris was as beautiful then in the springtime as it is today. And that people could do so awful things. It's really hard sometimes to think about it.
Well, there are no bullet-ridden buildings in Paris because it wasn't a city that was shot up by the Nazis. It was taken over by the Nazis. And life went on day by day. People got up, they went to work, they went to buy their groceries, they sat in cafes and had lunch and dinner. But Paris was in fact invaded, and they had to deal with a presence that they didn't like, and they didn't know what was coming down the road. And that frightened people, and it frightened Maury.
Now, so this book is set in World War II. The new book is going to be set in what time period?
Well, it's going to flip a little bit because I have to continue part of the story from the first book into the second book. So there will be large flashbacks into World War II, and then it will be set in the early 1950s after the war while Europe is rebuilding.
And that is a fascinating time.
It is, and the objective is the same, to create a thriller that will keep people on the edges of their seats. So I've narrowed down how we're going to do that, and it certainly will involve Paris. There will be some scenes in Germany, and there will be a lot of tension.
So you're having fun doing the research?
I'm loving it. I just returned from Germany, and that solidified some of the things I needed to do. So it's very exciting.
Well, you certainly have picked an interesting subject, and as I said, your writing is so good. So it's going to be a trilogy, and I know that at some point along the line they will pick this up, and it's going to be a film. I think probably streaming video. It needs more time than, you know, a feature film is nice, but it's too short for a story like this, because you have built up, throughout the story, you have built up these tension points, these points where we get to, which actually are ideal, you know, for an episode, and you're sort of holding your breath until the next section. And so from that point of view, it's very cinematic. Your writing is very cinematic.
Thank you. I, from your mouth to God's ears, I hope.
And to everybody, we have to go around the Beverly Hills Hotel and just take photos. Are you reading this book? Because I'm sure they are, because they are actually they need some good product, and certainly with your writing they have it. And as Nick said, when he gets a book and he can just flow with it, when his voice just takes it on and takes on the character. When you listen to that, had you listened to the entire tape book already?
Oh, I have, a couple of times.
And it's funny. I talk to authors, and they say they don't listen to their Audible books, and I'm not sure if I can believe them, because I think it's so thrilling when you know you've written a really great book, then to hear somebody like Nick, who is so dramatic. Isn't it amazing how he can take just a little inflection of his voice and put in sort of a chill? You sort of sit up and what's going to happen?
When I heard his voice the first time, I thought that was the voice of Maury. It was absolutely Maury's voice. And I went after Nick, as he said in his conversation. He'd gotten a couple of calls from me, and I pursued it. I thought, this is the voice. He can't tell me no, which he did several times.
because he really works for the publishers, and so it's really rare to be able to get somebody like him to do this. And I think it's just, well, you were right. You knew it, and actually, I knew it that when I probably, as I was reading it, because at that point he hadn't finished the Audible version, and in my head, Nick's voice is in my head, and when you told me that you got him, I was so thrilled, because I knew that it was not easy to get him, because he is in demand, but. For this book, he was the right choice.
He brought my characters to life, and I couldn't be happier.
And I know that he's going to continue with them, because I could hear in his voice too that he enjoyed it. You know, when you really enjoy reading a story and you really enjoy the work, I could hear it in his voice how much he enjoyed working with you.
I'm pleased to hear that from you. I think he did enjoy the work.
Yeah, and as I said to all my listeners, really, you know, I love to read hardback books, and I love to read. I read Kindle, but nowadays, if you can get both, there's this dual thing where you can get both, and it is so really wonderful to have the words, to listen to Nick. And then to have the words. And one of the things I discovered that as I, you know, I'm reading your book, I did occasionally stop and I actually looked up. I kept saying, I wish that they would put on the Kindle version, I wish they would put the paintings, because I had to stop and go and remind myself, although I know, you know, most of these paintings, because as I said, I'm also a bit of an artist, although I've only every once in a while, you know, I get back to it. I have that eye for art, and so when I was reading your book, it was really such a combination of joy of reading your words and going and looking at the artwork and then imagining the story in my mind. So, Bill, I think you've just done a absolutely fantastic job with The Storm Over Paris. And I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper again.
And, thank you for having me.
And just one more thing. Let's just tell people that, you know, you started writing rather later in life. You were a business, very, very successful business person, and you did so many exciting things in your life. But it's never too late. If I start this program with the line that this program is for writers and those who dream of writing. And here, Bill Grubman is a example of somebody who, you know, all the time, I'm sure in the back of his mind somewhere this book was fermenting. And you did it. You finally said, this is it. I'm going to do it.
I think it's just a matter of making the commitment, and you can start it at any time. Anybody can sit down, just start writing.
And find that joy on paper, correct?
Absolutely.
And you certainly have. And again, I want to thank you for being on Joy on Paper today.
Thank you so much for having me.
The next book is ready, one of my joys is that I get to read the book before anybody else.
My pleasure.
I get an early release, and that way I can prepare. And of course, we'll book you right away and have you on the program again. And I will. You listened to that little book buzz we did, little review.
I did, yes.
Well, we do these. I have a friend, Rita Moreau, who she loves to do these for authors, and she comes into the studio and she will do a review, and then I play them every once in a while because it is so important that people be reminded of books. So often people will say, oh, I want to read that book, but then they forget for a while, and so that's why I play these on all of my programs. So that people are reminded, and we will do one for you, and I will send it to you, so you will know that we're doing it for you. And you can put
That's
it on
so
your
kind, so- I appreciate it.
And you can put it on your social media.
I will.
And just get the word out there, and that's the important thing. You have to do the marketing. This is one of the things nowadays with all authors. You have to do marketing, but I'm sure you are an expert at that because you were such a great businessman, and the most fun, of course, is when you now can sit down and write the book. So have
exactly.
lots of fun, and keep me updated, okay?
I promise. Thank you so much.
And remember, I get invited to that launch party, okay?
Absolutely.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Bye-bye now, Bill.
I know.
Okay, bye. Okay. Well, he's so nice, and of course, I will always have Nicholas Guy Smith on, and he's just such a sweet person, and what a voice, and that's why he is called in Hollywood, he is called That Voice. It was just wonderful that he came on today, and as I said, this you'll enjoy this book, and it's always fun. I love when I'm looking at the streaming video and seeing if I read the book and if I recognize the person who's written the screenplay. So it's just fun. And when you read The Storm Over Paris, you also will start imagining who should play the different parts, and it's going to be fun casting that film. Now, I want to also say something wonderful. Irene Goodman offers a critique at the beginning of every month, so it's almost the beginning of the next month, and I would like to recommend that if you are to the point where you've written your book and you now not quite done with it, you want to know what to do with it, is it ready, should you start sending out your query letters, before you do that, the best thing to do, of course, you should have had it run it through an editor, not run through an editor, I don't mean online, I mean through a real editor who actually it reads every word that you write and has come back to you and has helped you polish your book. But before you start the next level, before you start the query process, I highly recommend that you go to IreneGoodman.com. Irene Goodman is one of the top literary agents in New York City. She knows what makes a good book. And she offers a critique. She auctions it at the beginning of every month. The money goes to charity, always to a wonderful cause. But the important thing is you get a critique from her. And it is a really, really in-depth critique. It not only analyzes your work, it analyzes your place in the marketplace. Where does it fit in? So you start thinking about what you have to do in order to actually polish your book before you start doing the query process. Then once you are ready, and you've sort of gone through Irene's suggestions and ideas, and then you can start sending out your query letters. You could send one to her, but there are so many other agents out there. And as I have told you all, the important thing when you are querying is to make sure that you know that the agent you are querying is actually an active agent. Do not use those ABC guides to agents. My suggestion is you go to Publishers Weekly. Every week they have book deals. And go to Publishers Weekly. And this week I see that one of Irene Goodman's agents, Barbara Powell, who has been on the program a number of times and who always has such great ideas for you authors out there, including what you have to put in a query letter. And I will be playing, why am I going to play it again? I'm going to have her on. That's what I'll do. I will invite her because she is mentioned this week in book deals. She got a book deal for Tracy Chi, who wrote The Reader. And Tracy has been on Joy on Paper before. And Tracy has a new book called We Are Not Free. And it sounds really great. It's a novel in stories. It examines mass incarcerations of Japanese Americans in U.S. during World War II. And it tells a story from 14 different perspectives. I'm sure it's going to be great. Tracy is absolutely delightful. I'm looking forward to having her back on the program again. And the agent is Barbara Powell. And she is with the Irene Goodman Literary Agency. And you can go and check it out. And, you know, really, if you are ready to send that book out, take a deep breath, stop for a moment, and look at Irene Goodman's auction. And it starts at the first of the month, which is coming up very soon. And see if you can be a winner in that. And you will be a winner in many ways, because just to have Barbara, to have Irene read your work is fantastic. So make sure that you do that. And speaking of Publishers Weekly, there's also another book deal that came this week. And this is I love this term, mid six figures. Isn't that nice? Mid six figures. Anyway, it's going to be a book that I am looking forward to reviewing and to interviewing the author. And it's Dean King. And he has written a book that I particularly know that it's going to be one of those books that I will not be able to put down. It is called Guardian of the Valley. And it's a nonfiction book. And it's about John Muir's fight to preserve Yosemite. It is so hard to believe for anyone who's ever been out to Yosemite, that area is so beautiful. And it is so hard to believe that we almost lost it as a place of beauty, because, it even back in those days, people wanted to build like crazy over there. And, of course, it would have ruined the area. And so I'm really excited that Dean King has written this book called Guardian of the Valley, and that he got a mid-six figures. I like that. That's somewhere like, $500,000, something like that. And it's going to be a wonderful book. He's a great writer, and it's a story about how they saved the whole Yosemite Valley, the area there, and I'm looking forward to that. Also, again, I want to thank Dave Chesson, who was on the other day from Kindlepreneur, and I thank you for the emails that I got following that interview, because Dave was right on with all of the points about marketing. As I told you, I just mentioned to William Grubman, marketing is so important. Authors today have to do their own marketing. Even the big publishers do very little marketing. And if you want to go to a place where you can see everything sort of in order, steps to follow, go to Kindlepreneur. And Dave Chesson has a whole list there, phase one, phase two, phase three, phase one before you write your book. Did you know there are things that you are supposed to be doing before you write your book? I know it's hard to believe, but really, it's not, you don't just sit down and say, oh, I'm writing the book today. You have to do some research. Of course, the first thing is if you have not registered your website with your name, do so. Even if you have a name, now so many authors, you know, your name is Jim Smith, then when you couldn't get Jim Smith, then you got Jim Smith Author, then you got Jim Smith Books, then, well, so you run out of things if you don't have, if you have a common name. So make sure that you register your name, even if you're not going to have your book ready for 3 years, at least you've registered your name. And even if you think you have an unusual name, it's amazing. I was looking for an author whose name I thought, absolutely nobody has this name. Nobody ever would have this name. But sure enough, there were three people with the same name. And I thought, oh, boy, that must have been a disappointment for the author, because he did not get the, you know, his name. As a matter of fact, he didn't even get author, his name with the word author. So you have to make sure you do that. And of course, there's a lot of research you have to do. You have to decide on the software that you're going to use. And I highly recommend Scrivener. Angela Hunt was here 2 weeks ago, and she is a best-selling author. She uses, she does all the historical fiction, biblical, set in biblical times, and she uses Scrivener and highly recommends it, and so do I, because it really makes your life easier, puts everything in order, and the nice thing about Scrivener is that you can immediately, when you finish a chapter, you can turn it into an EPUB version, so you can put it on your iPad or whatever device you carry around and read it, because you should be always rereading and reading and rereading your work as you go along. But there's lots of hints here on things that you should do. So phase one of on Kindlepreneur is before you write your book. Phase two is putting your book together. And phase three is book launch. Oh, and that is the fun time. So go there. And remember what I say, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you are very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, a streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know. But you won't unless you start writing. So write a page a day, and in a year, you're going to have a book. And meanwhile, make sure that you say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed. And he's saluting me, and I'm saluting him, because I love to be saluted. Oh, I wanted to be a general. I should have been a general. Okay, bye-bye now, everybody. Have a nice weekend.